In those ancient days, when the good destinies had been decreed, and after An and Enlil had set up the divine rules of heaven and earth, Vin, the lord of broad wisdom, Enki, the master of destinies, founded dwelling places. Debate between bird and fish. Welcome to Warfare, Advancement, Revisionism. My name is Preston Floyd, and as always, I'm your host. I'd like to thank everyone for joining me this week. I appreciate it. If you're a newcomer, welcome. And if you're a returning listener, thank you as well. Please be sure to like, subscribe, download, all that good stuff. Unfortunately, this episode probably will not be the best. I spent the last hour recording. It is now 11 o'clock my time, and I'm having to re-record because Audacity apparently will just not let me save this file. And I've essentially, after rebooting, which it required me to do, it recovered my previous version, and when I selected to recover it, it said that the version was already open, and the Audacity crashed, and when I opened it again, the file was gone. So, apologies ahead of time. This is going to be probably me being a little short. So, just gonna go ahead and put that out there. However, I am going to go ahead and try and get the high points of what I went over. So this week we'll be going over some of the actual written accounts containing creation myths and accounts the Sumerians believed, as well as historical records of their cities and peoples. Before that, I did have a couple of things I wanted to clarify from the last episode. First, I didn't really make much of a point on it like I did about the Egyptians, but Sumerian religion was not a monolith. And much like the Egyptian towns all having their own traditions and myths, the Sumerians were no different. Every city had their own version of events. The difference being the Sumerians, being concentrated in a much smaller region, didn't have quite as much variation, and they all followed kind of the same big picture of how the universe and man were created. When they had differences, it appears to me to be more focused on emphasizing their local god and goddess's role in said events more than anything else. Also, they tended to have less variation in their respective deities in terms of their roles and things like that. Though that is not to say that there were not maybe some different versions of certain gods that later one god won out, or, you know, they kind of developed different roles after the fact. And Sumer developed quite differently politically from Egypt, and for reasons we will get into later, there was never at least an successful attempt to standardize these various religious traditions and myths. The second thing I wanted to go over, the term Anunnaki is actually Akkadian, and I did say I wanted to try to keep things limited to the Sumerian version of things. The term or terms the Sumerians used for the group were closer to Anunna or Anunna. Also, I don't think I mentioned it directly, but if you listen to the video on YouTube, you probably noticed a blue bar on the desktop version or a black bar on mobile, with a short blurb from and a link to the Wikipedia article on Anunnaki. The reason for this is that there are a lot of pseudo-historians / pseudo-archaeologists and ancient alien proponents that try to tie their theories to the Sumerian myths and tales. Now, of course, they try to do this with other mythological groups and stories, but the Anunnaki are among the most common targets. And I think that probably has to do with the fact that most people aren't familiar with the Anunnaki. But I do think they were also the first group to kind of get this treatment. So for popular conspiracy theories and things like that, YouTube likes to mark videos with links that offer entry points to more mainstream and well-sourced views for those types of things. They even do that on videos that don't seriously discuss that, it seems. So, yeah, just make of that what you will. I also had a question about An's name meaning sky from a listener, Eric. He wanted to know if there were any issues during the first decipherment of Sumerian cuneiform and being able to identify various things from, like, their maybe divine counterpart. And that's a great question, and I did answer him a little bit more in depth. I thought it would be an interesting point to go over on the show. Now, I'm not going to go into details on how cuneiform was cracked and deciphered yet, but to simplify things, several languages were written in cuneiform, and we were able to decipher Sumerian thanks to multilingual transcripts of Sumerian and other languages, particularly Akkadian. Now, the Akkadians called An Anu. When they wrote his name, they used the symbols A and Nu. And if you're interested in viewing them from, viewing what they look like, you can find them via a couple of online catalogs. Now, I'm using the more recent Mesopotamisch Zeichen Lexikon, or MZL, numbering system. And to any German listeners, I am sorry I butchered that. I know I did. But I'm just going to use the abbreviation MZL from now on. Now, A is number 839, and it means water. Nu is number 112, and means not or not to be. So literally, this means not water. And that is a very imaginative description of the sky. It's probably my favorite euphemism for the sky. However, the Akkadians had another sign they would add to the prefix of An when writing the god's name. This sign is MZL10, and this was the sign An. You see, the Akkadians borrowed a practice from the Sumerians. When they were writing a divinity's name, they would preface it with the sign An. In this sign, the sign is called Dingir or Dingi. And this was added as kind of a sign of respect of the god, but also at least a little bit for that additional context. In modern academic literature, you'll see it referred to as the divine determinative. The Akkadians also had a third reading for An, and they used it for referring to a generic god or an unknown god. In this case, the sign would be read as Elu. Now, the Sumerians only ever wrote An as the one symbol. The Akkadians had a separate word for sky or heaven. This word is Samu. And I think if Akkadian is an Eastern Semitic language, so if you speak a Western Semitic language or language descended from a Western Semitic language like Arabic, I think the word for heaven is fairly close to that. So to the Sumerians, even saying that An was sunny, they would mean both the primordial being and progenitor of the gods, and all life is, he's bright and sunny right now. They did not make distinctions between the god's physical manifestation, or its spiritual aspect. And if you told a Sumerian that An didn't exist, he would think you were insane, because all he would have to do to definitively prove you wrong would be to point up. The sky is on, literally. That said, like other peoples, the Sumerians didn't appear to actively worship the primordial deities like An and Ki. They preferred instead to worship gods with direct influence over things that affected their day-to-day lives. Of course, An got his due, but by the literate period, the worship of him was mostly indirect or in concert with the worship of other gods. And there isn't really any evidence that Ki ever had a direct cult either. Instead, her female descendants had kind of divided her bounty into their own spheres and took the worship for themselves. Or maybe once Ki is separated from An, it may have been that she developed a different or a more defined personality rather than just being, you know, the broad earth. Which that new personality maybe became the focus of worship. The only real theories about this phenomenon that I've read are that either primordial beings or you know, are remnants of a pantheon of a people that were either driven out, absorbed, or killed off by the incoming peoples, in this case, the Sumerians. Or that those beings were considered to be too alien or too dangerous for people to attempt to draw their attention. A lot of early worship is kind of meant more as an appeasement rather than like a call for aid. And this, you know, again, for the earlier periods, those are forces, the earth and the heaven itself. Probably not something you want to draw too much attention to you as an individual. And I think that is all the high points for what I wanted to cover from last week's episode. So let's go ahead and move on to this week's main subject, or subjects, I guess. A written record purporting to cover the history of the Sumerians during this season, and even, well, prior. Now, I'm going to say at the outset that portions of this document are obviously not true. You'll see why quickly, but that doesn't mean it doesn't have some historical value, and some parts of the document can be corroborated, though we won't be discussing those portions in this episode. This written record is known as the Sumerian Kings List, or excuse me, the Sumerian King List, or SKL for short. In Sumerian, it was known as the Nam-Lugal, which you can translate as a couple of different ways, but essentially it purports to list the kings of Sumer, quote, after the kingship descended from heaven, unquote. Of course, kingship was a gift from Enlil to man. It allows us to become civilized and form great cities. And it's one of the more important aspects of civilization that the gods gave us, at least according to the Sumerians. Now, their term for king was Lugal, which literally translates as big man, though they had other terms for rulers of cities as well, and these include En and Ensi. En just means lord, of course. We talked about that with the etymology of Enlil and Enki. Ensi, meaning something like master of or lord of the fields or farms. Now, initially, in the literature, these terms are not very well defined in relation to each other or how they differ from each other. And some cities may have only used one or the other or, you know, swapped them out over time. Eventually, though, Lugal became the clearly more prestigious title, and En and Ensi's were typically subordinate to a Lugal, though not always willingly or necessarily for a long period of time. And we will go into greater detail about this in later seasons. But I want to cover specifically what the King's List says about this season. Now, I mentioned last week, with many Sumerian documents, we sometimes have a few versions of them, and the King List is no different. I think at the moment we have 16 versions. They were all written in Sumerian, though some of the copies do have, or in fact, I think most of the copies do have some type of Akkadian influence. And there, this is them using Akkadian words and names. The oldest version that we found was probably originally written around 2000-ish BC, give or take a couple of centuries. The newer ones were written to as late as the 1500s BC, give or take again. And they were usually written on large, thick clay bricks or cylinders, and they usually have two columns of text on each side. Now, I'm going to start by reading the first 39 lines. Most of the translations I'll be reading are coming from one of two places, either Livius.org or the Electronic Text Corpus of Sumerian Literature, or a combination of the two. Also, I will stop and explain the Latinization of certain names as needed, so just keep in mind that I'm using what's closer to probably the Sumerian pronunciation, but we, in English and other European languages, use the versions I'm going to be explaining here in a moment. After the kingship descended from heaven, the kingship was in Eridu. This is Eridu. In Eridug, Alulim became king. He ruled for 28,800 years. Al-Aljar ruled for 36,000 years. Two kings, they ruled for 64,800 years. Then Eridug fell, and the kingship was taken to Bad-Tabira. In Bad-Tabira, Inmenluana ruled for 43,200 years. Inmengalana ruled for 28,800 years. Dumuzid, the shepherd, ruled for 36,000 years. Three kings, they ruled for 108,000 years. Then Bad-Tabira fell, and the kingship was taken to Larag, also known as Larak. In Larag, Insipadziana ruled for 28,800 years. One king, he ruled for 28,800 years. Then Larag fell, and the kingship was taken to Zimbir, also known as Sippar. In Zimbir, Inmindurana became king. He ruled for 21,000 years. One king he ruled for 21,000 years. Then Zimbir fell, and the kingship was taken to Kurapag, also known as Surapak. In Kurapag, Ubaratutu became king. He ruled for 18,600 years. One king he ruled for 18,600 years. In five cities, eight kings, they ruled for 241,200 years. Then the flood swept over. All right, so let's go ahead and point out the obvious problems with this source concerning this time period. This purports that humans have lived in the Sumerian cities with a king ruling over them since at least 2043-200 BC, if the Sumerian kings list was written in 2000 BC at the start. Now, there is no archaeological evidence of Homo sapiens successfully leaving Africa, even in small numbers, prior to 80 to 70,000 years ago, much less living in cities at even halfway that point between that and when the king list was transcribed. Another problem is obviously humans do not live that long. So what is useful about this source? Well, it shows that we know at least a little of what the Sumerians did not know about their history, and we know at least a little bit of what they believed about the history of humanity. And I think that has value. I think you guys can see that too. There is another point to consider. In that the king's list, as it continues, we get more realistic reign lengths and to verifiable historical figures, kings who evidence from other sources show existed, even some with unreasonable lifespans. We know that they lived. Now, obviously, they probably didn't live nearly as long as the king list said they did, but they did. And this has led some to the theory that maybe all these kings were real, and that the later subscribes who transmitted the list were working from earlier written sources or copies of them that may have been misunderstood, or from a period where the numerical units may have meant something else or been written differently, and they just weren't sure how to read them and just thought that that sounded well. Or it's possible that some of the kings were real and others were mythological or made up to cover periods of times where they had no records. And this has led to a lot of attempts to kind of thread the needle and come up with a more reasonable and realistic interpretation of dates. Now, I'm not aware of any of those attempts being super well supported and successful, at least for all of the king list. There are portions of the king's list that actually, yeah, there's a decent shot that that's accurate. Of course, there's always, again, with the area and the archaeological problems of digging into that mud, there's a range of dates it could be, but you know, they have kind of narrowed it down. It's certain parts of the king list. Another point we can glean is that the Sumerians believe that something seriously changed after the flood. Men didn't live as long, and cities fell much more frequently, and according to the list, the first five cities with kingships were not home to kings at later dates, at least in the next section either. And we will also see at later parts of the King List that these things are not as straightforward or as neat as they would have us believe. In some cases, kingship does not really end in one city and start in another. In some cases, we have multiple cities hosting competing kingships, meaning maybe the same thing was happening at these murkier dates. There could have been dueling kingships in Eridu and one in Larrak or Bad Tabira. Who knows? Now, I am going to go over the next section, though I should point out from that last section there, the last kingship in Surapak. There is evidence of a flood there. Now it is dated to a little bit after this season, so it's possible that all of these kings are after this season, but again, I'm of the opinion that there were probably many floods, so maybe that was the one that ended the kingship in Surapak, but there's no telling that, you know, or that it's very possible that there were earlier floods that was kind of combined and merged with. So I'm just going to read this next section and then we'll continue on from there. After the flood had swept over and the kingship had descended from heaven, the kingship was in Kik. This is also known as Kish. In Kik, Jukur became king. He ruled for 1,200 years. Kulasina Bel ruled for 960 years. Najik Likma ruled for 670 years. Intarahana ruled for 420 years, 3 months, and 3.5 days. Babam ruled for 300 years. Puanam ruled for 840 years. Kalibum ruled for 960 years. Kalumum ruled for 840 years. Zukapkip ruled for 900 years. Atab ruled for 600 years. Makata, the son of Atab, ruled for 840 years. Arwium, the son of Makata, ruled for 720 years. Etana, the shepherd, who ascended to heaven and consolidated all foreign countries, became king. He ruled for 1,500 years. Bali, the son of Etana, ruled for 400 years. Imenuna ruled for 660 years. Melemkik, the son of Imenuna, ruled for 900 years. 1,560 are the years of the dynasty of Imenuna. Barsal Nuna, the son of Imenuna, ruled for 1,200 years. Zamug, the son of Barsal Nuna, ruled for 140 years. Tizkar, the son of Zamug, ruled for 305 years. Ilku ruled for 900 years. Iltasadum ruled for 1,200 years. Imin Baragsi, who made the land of Elam submit, became king. He ruled for 900 years. Aga, the son of Imin Baragsi, ruled for 625 years. 1,525 are the years of the dynasty of Imin Baragsi. 23 kings, they ruled for 24,510 years, 3 months, and 3.5 days. Then Kik was defeated, and the kingship was taken to Eanna. All right, so a lot more kings after the flood, and they don't rule nearly as long, but the city of Kish had a lot more kings, again, because people aren't living as long. And again, the reign of the kingship there was 24,000 years. That puts it ahead of Surapak in terms of kingship. It puts it ahead of Sippar in terms of kingship. The only city it was behind in terms of kingship was Eridu and Bad Tabira. Now, is that a political message? That Kish was more successful than two of those three cities? Or three of those two cities? Hold on. Yeah, possibly. It's possible that the scribes writing the record down, they were trying to say, like, oh, these periods were, you know, more successful than these other periods. There may have been regional rivalries between the cities where these were written down, and the cities being described in the King's List. Also, I should go ahead and just point out that the dates for these kings, they're different. Some of them have different lengths for some of these other, for some of the kings, although some of them are identical. Also, I find the Intara Anna, where he ruled for 420 years, 3 months, and 3.5 days. That's a very specific period of time, and it's just the one thing about this that just sticks out to me in terms of the timing. It's so precise. And from this, you would think all the other kings ruled exactly for those years. They didn't have months or partial months, and then a few days. So I don't know what that means, but it's a very interesting point. Now, one king in this is believed to have been at least semi-historical. This is Etana, the shepherd. He is later deified. We actually have a myth about him from the Babylonian period. And we'll talk more about that, obviously, later. But he was obviously at least from the King's List. And we get a very good description of why he ascended to heaven. He consolidated all the foreign countries. What those foreign countries are, we don't know. But he has the standout rule for all of the kings. He's by far the longest individual in this section of the King's List. And he is one of, I'm aware of, 3 individuals, at least in the first 3 sections of the King's List, who are deified. Dumuzi, who I mentioned in that first section, he is also deified. He is also listed as a shepherd, interestingly enough. But he is actually married to Inanna in many myths. And there's a kind of a story about him seducing her. Now, their relationship ends at has a very interesting outcome, a very rocky state of their relationship, and we'll get into that a little bit later too. But the next section, and I'm not going to go over that this week because it's well after this season, but Gilgamesh is another person on the King's List who is deified, and Gilgamesh was a real king. Now, we'll get into it at the time, but obviously there are aspects of his myth that are obviously made up and not related to his actual kingship. But it's also important to remember that the Sumerian version of Gilgamesh's life is a lot different from the one I think most of us are familiar with. But again, that's all stuff for later. Now, to kind of go back over the first, I guess, group of kings, the kings before the flood, the antediluvian kings, if you will. Elulam is not a normal Sumerian name. His name means either horn of the red deer or seed of the red deer. Possibly, he had a parent who was called Red Deer. And this kind of is consistent with the Sumerian idea that early men were closer to animals. And it's only with the intervention of the gods that they become more civilized. So it's possible that Elulam, this first king, was kind of this transition from this wild life to this settled life. At least that's one way of looking at it. Alaljar, his name is very interesting. It could be read a couple of different ways, but my personal theory is that it means something to to bring forth honey, or to work for, or to work to bring forth honey, or something along those lines. Possibly, maybe if Alaljar, which we don't have any records, there are no inscriptions mentioning him, or even someone close to having his name in earlier records from Eridu. Perhaps he was accredited with inventing apiaries, and we just don't have a version of that myth. Also, the term fell, when a city fell, that's kind of very vague. It doesn't tell us how it fell. Some of these cities do experience attack, but the universal destruction, obviously, it doesn't really fit. Some of these cities just, they stop being viable in terms of water usage, so they kind of get much smaller, and then in some cases they're completely abandoned. Interestingly enough, Bad Tabira, we don't know where that was, and that's the second city after the kingship left Eridu. Now, Bad Tabira, we think we know where it is, but it hasn't been excavated. This is the one that Dumuzi was the last king of. Now, the first two kings, I do not know their names. I could not get their names written in Sumerian, so I can't kind of break them down etymologically speaking. But Dumuzi is something like... Dumu is something like young or youth. It can also mean throat. And Zed is something along the lines of to call forth. Now, looking at Etana and Gilgamesh, two other people who are later on the king's list who are also deified, like Dumuzi. And I think there are some inscriptions for Dumuzi. Now, the problem with that is that actually the person who was deified after his death, or was that someone named for the god? Is this the first, like, Theophoric name, or Theophilic, I forget which is the correct version. We don't know. But Bad Tabira, the god of Bad Tabira was Lual, and he is very closely associated with Inanna. He is her, I guess, accompanier on the Inanna's descent to the Netherworld. Now, their exact relationship, kind of hard to say. It's never really explicitly stated. He may have been one of her many lovers. He may have just been a very faithful and loyal servant. But it's interesting that Dumuzi, king of Lulal's city, would eventually go on to be her husband. Perhaps he made the introduction. Who can say? Or maybe there's some half-remembered truth. Perhaps Dumuzi had exerted influence over Uruk, Inanna's city. I believe that's the one. Sorry, I'm kind of getting a little tired. I don't want to look it up. I don't want to click on anything and crash Audacity. That is very interesting. Now, moving to Larrak, we go to Insipa Zidana. I could not get his name in Sumerian either. Also, the same thing for Inmindurana. Although his name is, I think it could be something like... yes, excuse me. Yeah, now... Inmindurana, his name means something like Lord over the above and below, and he was remembered, at least popularly, he apparently is the person who discovers a lot of divination and magic. So he is kind of at least popularly remembered as someone who taught the Sumerians how to perform these specific feats. I know one thing he's associated with is pouring oil into water and observing the patterns in that. That's one of their divination practices. And they have a lot of others. There are different kinds of rituals that the Sumerians have to find things out. But that's where his fame comes from. Now again, was he real, or is he just one of those mythological figures? There are, you know, stories of wise men, sages, if you will, you know, that the Sumerians do keep memories of. Now, again, how many of those people are actually real? Are they amalgamation of another people? It is very hard to say. Now, the last king before the flood, Ubara Tutu, the ruler of Surapak. Now, his name is very interesting. Ubara can mean breast, it can mean nipple, it could also mean vessel. And Tutu, that's the letter, or their symbol for the, or their sign for two, and that's back-to-back. So there's two different versions of two. And that can mean to bring forth or to erect, which, you know, depending on how you want to read that name, you know, you could get some very interesting translations for that. Now, I don't know if Tutu back-to-back has a special meaning. I don't believe it does. I didn't see that it did in the, like, the kind of the primer I'm using for translation stuff, but it's possible it did. Now, Ubara Tutu is actually the father of the Sumerian Noah, and he's... In some versions of the King's List, and not in the one that's on the site I was reading from, but Ubara Tutu, his son, Zusudra, is the... he survives the flood with the help of the gods who do not want humanity wiped out. And I'll go into more detail on that story probably next week. But Zusudra is actually, in some traditions, the first king and priest of the gods after the flood in the city of Kish. Though he does not reign for long, only around, in that version of the King's List, I think it's only around 20 years. And in some versions, you know, he leaves to go live on a mountain. And in some cases, and I think this is mainly the Babylonian version later, and he has a different name in that version, it's Utnapishtim, but he becomes, the gods allow him to be immortal, he and his wife, and they just kind of live this simple life out in the wilderness. And in the Epic of Gilgamesh, Gilgamesh travels to visit Utnapishtim. But again, I don't believe that's in the Sumerian version, but I plan on double checking that. But that's all for later. Now, I did go over a little bit of the Eridu Genesis in the recording I did earlier. I'm going to hold off on that for this week. If you have any questions, constructive criticism, feedback, please let me know. Send me an email at war@revpod@gmail.com. You can send me a direct message on X/Twitter. You can comment on any of the YouTube videos. And I do stream on YouTube pretty much every day during the week and sometimes on the weekends. So you're welcome to drop in if I'm live and say hey in chat, ask questions there. You can't post links there, but you can say hey. Please like, subscribe, all that kind of stuff. Download, rate 5 stars, whatever you do, I would appreciate it. We're almost to 200 people on YouTube. And the numbers on RSS are continuing to climb steadily. Hopefully, if I can continue averaging 500 downloads over the next couple of months, I can maybe start getting some cents in from some ad revenue, which I don't need that to do the show, but it would be nice to get a little bit back. But, you know, I'm not doing it for anything like that. I'm going to continue doing it, whether or not I ever get to any level of monetization on any feed. I do enjoy the show, even when I am up late and I'm going to have to remain up while the episode renders. Regardless, I hope you all have a great day and a great rest of your week from whenever you're listening to this. I appreciate you all. I'll see everyone next time. Peace.